Geeks. This is the Mini PC Show. We're at episode number 41. You are here with us, and we are with you. Thank you for joining us in the pods, the casts world today. I don't know. We've got the full cast of characters. We've got Flying Rich.
So that's right, from the Hughes Compound Southern Command.
Where it's probably 60 degrees right now.
60, my ass! It's a family show.
Yeah, closer to 80.
No, it was mid-80s.
Mid-80s. Oh, man. That's all right. It's going to get up to 50 here this weekend. Brian.
Hey.
What's going on, Cable Guy?
What's going on, guys? Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back. Thanks for... I'm sorry I didn't make it last week. I had some major car trouble. It was already a 6.5-hour drive. It turned into an 11-hour drive because I had to sit a couple hours in a shop in some town. I still don't even know what town I was in. But they ordered a radiator cap from Napa. 2 hours later, it arrived, and I was on my way.
Well, on the bright side, Eric, if you go to your phone, if you click your apps, and you open up your maps, you wait for that to load, then you hit the hamburger menu on the top left, and you hit your timeline, you can probably go back in time and see exactly where that town was and get the name of it, just in case some legal reasons popped up where you had to have it. Just saying.
Yeah, I didn't spend enough time there to cause that kind of trouble. But
so that was it, a radiator cap?
Your timeline. Oh, yeah, I'm a newbie at that. It says, let's go. So it's like,
so that was it, a radiator cap?
Yeah.
That was the magic device that inhibited your transportation.
I know. So I'm driving down the road, minding my own business, and then all of a sudden, every light's flashing at me. It's telling me, pull over, turn off the air conditioning. I'm like, it's like 30-some degrees. I'm not running my air, but whatever, I'll do it. So I turned on my heat, you know, knowing this. I had two large Casey's water bottles with me for the road, so I was prepared. I had water with me, so I pulled over, looked underneath the car. It was spewing antifreeze all over the ground. I sat there for about 10 minutes thinking, dang, I wish I would have taken that exit I just passed. That would have been nice. And then I'm like, oh, I got water. I'll throw it in there and drive to the next exit and see how it goes, you know. So I drive to the next exit, and that was just basically an exit to another highway. So I drove down that one for a while until I found another exit. So, Dor, my timeline is telling me today, but I don't know. Play with that.
You might have to go to your desktop to go back that far now that you've seen it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, that's one of the little convenient ways that your personal pocket device, some people say, says spy on you. But, you know, yeah, there's a calendar icon in the top right. You click that, you can go back.
Oh, yeah, good. So it wasn't shady enough of an area that I took a picture. You know, so that would be saved in my time. Okay, let's see here.
So can I ask the million-dollar question? Sure. How much did a radiator cap in installation process cost you?
Take a guess.
$200.
He's in the middle of nowhere where money has much more of a value. I'm gonna say $80.
Brian, do you want to get in on this?
I'm gonna go with Dor.
$1.
With exactly the same
$1.
Amount. But this is not that. You can't. There's no game that you can ever have the same guess.
I'll say $100.
Okay, Dor wins. You should have stuck with your first guess. It was $80. It was $88
for a $5 radiator cap.
Yeah, yeah, and
yeah, supply and demand. Baby.
And charge me. You know, I don't know. They did reset my ODB2 sent thing because my check engine light came on after all this stuff. I'm like, could you just reset that so I know it's from that thing that happened?
Oh, I don't have my camera on, but I got a Bluetooth device. It's the Elm 327. You can pick it up on Amazon for like $20.
You know, I got one from AMZ Review Trader a long time. It doesn't work. I can't get it to connect to Bluetooth with anything.
Yeah, I'm real sure you get these for about $20 on Amazon. I know I got mine on Amazon, and everything is an Elm 327 clone, which is actually a PIC microcontroller, which preceded all of our mini PCs.
Hmm. Now, on the last Android App Addict show, Mark Cockrell talked about his entire using it to check out his what happened to his timing issue on his truck. His check engine light came on. Instead of paying somebody $80 to hook it up to a scanner and find out he needs to do something, he spent $20 on Amazon and found out he needed to do something. Now he can go do it.
Oh yeah,
and he even had an app that tells you all kinds of stuff about your car once you got it hooked in.
Yeah, there's an app called Torque.
That's the one he brought. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just listening to that show today. I didn't make it to that one either, but good listening if anybody's into that.
Well, I'm happy you made it back in one piece, and I'm happy it didn't break the bank for you, Eric.
Me too.
Now, what I'll ask you is, in the last 2 weeks, because you're the one who hasn't been here for 2 weeks, is there anything happening in the mini PC world that you thought ooh, cool, what's this? Or have you picked up any devices?
I added more games to my my Raspberry Pi 2 gaming little thing I got going on with my
Okay, now you're using RetroPie?
RetroPie on the Pi Drive. So when I boot up, Pi Drive is kind of like the, it gives you a right off the bat with the Pi Drive ROM, it gives you like different OSs to boot into. And, right. And yeah, and RetroPie is one of those OSs.
It, to answer a quick question from a listener who asked me in chat, I'm going to, so everyone else hears this answer. To add quote-unquote emulators to your RetroPie, you really don't. What you do is you access your RetroPie OS over your network. So it's a shared drive. You browse your network, you find the RetroPie device, and when you access it, you'll see all these folders for all these different emulators. But when you boot up the Pi the first time, you only see like four or five entries, but you see like 20 entries in these folders. The gimmick is you add a game to that folder, then you reboot your RetroPie. Now that emulator shows up in the list of available emulators to play games. If there's no games available, they won't prompt you with the emulator.
Yeah, and I, when I set it up, I thought I could go around that, you know, and just like log into the SD card and do it. No, you really have to use the network, I mean, to do it. That didn't work for me the other way. Now, I've had the weirdest problem with Sega Genesis. I can't get anything to go into that folder for some reason. It's there, but it just doesn't accept anything. I can't expand it or nothing. It's a weird issue I had when I was setting it up. But other than that, it's been good.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I'll say my big tip towards that is typically your generic game controllers off of Amazon that are like sub $10 seem to work great. You don't need to spend $40, $60, $80 on a controller to get a good experience.
Yeah, I'm using an Xbox 360 controller, which you can find everywhere now because 360 is the old Xbox. So.
Yeah, I think I picked it up like $15.
Wow, that's good.
And it's a nice controller. It works pretty good. And that's the same one I use, like, if I'm gaming on my computer, because it's got a regular USB, you know, works with everything. Works for Linux. It works right off the bat, too. Windows, everything.
Very cool. Do you want to go through some of the emails we
got? Yeah, we do. We got some emails. Yeah, we'll read the first one comes from Mike F., and he's telling us what for a little bit here. He says, haven't been listening too long, so I don't yet associate voices with names. But The Upboard fanboy needs to tone it down. No,
is that beard door? Could,
yeah, I don't know. You guys flip a coin on both. Which one. What do you think, Brian? They're both fanboys, aren't they?
Yeah, this is either gonna be Richard Dorr, one of the two. You guys better cut that out.
Yeah. Says tone it down. No awards because it hasn't shipped yet.
Wait a minute. Pause. Then I don't know what I have in my hand. I thought the box said Upboard.
It's your hand.
All right. I'm assuming.
Rich, did you send me a fake device?
No, I sent you a real Upboard.
So you did send me an Upboard.
Yes, and I have an Upboard.
So it has shipped.
Well, and I'm assuming the guy's talking about the Upboard 2 or the Upboard Squared.
Good call.
Said that.
Okay.
All right. Mike goes on and says, the recent lists of single board computers I've seen have disappointed. Not one has enough. Six, in my opinion, SATA ports for a proper home small business NAS. Any suggested add-on ports, etc.? He's got some more. Do you guys want to answer that question at all?
Why don't you just finish and then we'll go at it. Right.
Likewise, I've found very few single board computers suitable for firewalls. I demand low power consumption for 24/7 operation and very few x86 boards measure up. Anything better than the PC Engine's APU2 Alix boards turn up? In the meantime, I'll go with the low-cost, sub-$50 complete router solutions from Ubiquiti and Microtik.
Microtik.
Regards, Mike.
I actually have a small Microtik eval unit that I haven't evaled, and I feel like a real jerk, but I got to get to it. He is part right about if he's talking about the Upboard Square being a fanboy because it doesn't exist, and it doesn't exist if it's not in our hands. So,
and I'm still a fanboy because we only have history to go off of.
And I agree with you. And
yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I was going to do both sides of that. Wow, who's got that nice ringtone?
Sorry about
door.
That.
Brian's on call.
The door.
So, I'm a little teapot.
That's
So
that's gonna be Brian, right?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'll tone that down.
He's a little deep high.
So the upboard rocks, and I'm using it. Dor, you're driving that every day. You're using that as a computer every day, correct?
Yeah.
And my only gripe with the current upboard, I forget, is that 4 gigs of RAM on that machine?
Yes, 32 gigs of storage, 4 gigs of RAM.
Okay. My only gripe is I would use it every stinking day as my desktop, but it doesn't have two monitor ports. And if I could plug two HDMI or DVI or whatever, you know, some sort of combination, I'd be using that thing every day. I actually got a case printed for it. I, you know, Velcro it, whatever, on the back of my monitor, and that would be my daily driver. I'm so juiced about that. And it's not like other boards. So the Banana Pi M3, I use it for Time Capsule. I use it for Plex. Does it work? Yes. Could it be better? There's all sorts of things that could be better on that. Especially, you know, heat. There's a number of issues with that board. I am running Diet Pi, an unsupported version of Diet Pi on it. And again, Diet Pi love, massive Diet Pi love. The Banana Pi Pro is a freaking rock star, but I'm not messing with it. In fact, I don't think I've touched anything on that in over a year. And that's running my crash plan backup. And that's a freaking rock star. Is there something more I'd want with it or less I want with it? And I can't really say because, to be completely intellectually honest about it, I haven't done a whole lot with it. I am running SATA and crash plan. So the idea, if up, you know, the guys that do the upboard, if they came out with the current model upboard with two HDMIs on it, I'd be all sorts of excited. They're coming out with a bigger, badder, better upboard with two HDMI ports. Is it two HDMI ports? I know there's two Ethernet ports on it. You know, more memory, more, you know, more of all of that currently existing upboard goodness. So yes, it doesn't exist yet. I can't plug it in. But if they're going to deliver 60% of what they did on the current upboard, I'm going to be thrilled.
So the upboard that you have, what's the processor that you have on that?
It's an Atom processor.
Okay, so it's x86 then?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so, all right. Okay, and have you tried any of the USB to VGA adapters that we talked about?
Or looked into haven't. Yeah, you're right. We've talked about that stuff. I haven't picked any of them up because you're right. Initially, some of them were pretty high priced, and I think you sent me some links for some lower priced items, and I guess I just kind of lost interest.
I'm just saying that may fix your problem if it works with Linux, though. That's the thing. I know they work with Windows. I don't know about Linux.
Right. So just for rehash, I just brought the upboard page up. All right, so it has one HDMI, 1 gig Ethernet, 4 USB 2.0 full-size ports. I think there's an OTG on it also. But I know I've mentioned this before when I've talked about upboard. Audio's on the HDMI. So if you're looking for an audio out, you know, 3.5 millimeter jack, you're not getting it. There's USB 3.0 OTG on this. I'm sorry, I forgot about that because I was plugging into a USB 3 external hard drive with it also. So, yeah, once you're running full speed USB 3.0, that's another super big love factor on my part. Definitely good board. Let me bring up the specs for the upboard squared if I can find it quick.
While you're looking for that, audio over HDMI did cause an issue when I was making that, what I was just talking about a little bit of the Pi. Why can't I say that?
RetroPie.
Yeah, I don't know why I can't remember that. So I ended up having to actually use the Raspberry Pi's audio out. I tried two different adapters and neither of them worked for
There is a way by default on Pi-based OSs to reroute the audio out the audio jack. It's in the, I want to say, config.txt file.
I was able to reroute it through the Pi door.
It's the composite component.
Yeah, why can't I remember?
Analog jack.
The game part, though, it had it built into that OS. Oh, in the settings where I could switch from HDMI to the audio out. But even when I had it on HDMI, my adapters just didn't work for it.
Okay, so I'm sorry. It took me a while to get back to the specs for the up squared or up two. So 2 gig Ethernet. So yeah, you want a firewall? You should be able to do it with that.
Oh no, you can. Period.
Two HDMI, two USB 3.0.
Three USB 3.0.
Well, you got an OTG
on the other side of the board.
What else? So, oh, okay, yeah, there's actually, so there's four USB 3.0, three full size and one OTG. You got SATA 3. And I don't know what somebody's needs are. And I don't mean to trash somebody that listens to the show or writes to us, but six SATA ports? I've never used six SATA ports on a computer in a home or small business. And realistically, at the price of some of these smaller single board computers, just buy another board. You know, if you need more drive and more NAS, are there SATA splitters? I thought there was somebody that did, or there's USB to SATA splitter. Anyhow, that's kind of you're getting real Rube Goldberg on it, redneck engineering.
Well, yeah, but it basically has to be still supported in the hardware. It isn't like every SATA port can be split.
Oh, okay.
Right, because you need power as well.
Yeah, power is easy to come by. Signal, but
when you're not in an SBC small form factor.
Right. Well, you can always do an external power supply, common ground external power supply.
Yeah, and really quick, he mentioned PC Engines. I don't know if you guys are aware of PC Engines. They are basically the only word I can think of is in cahoots, but they're not. They're the hardware side of the router firewall software that is literally enterprise grade but home grade too. People can install it. Cannot remember the name of the operating system. This is their hardware side. PCEngines.ch, straight out of China. You go there. It is the cheapest place I've been able to find moderate-sized boards. These are not mini computers, but they're not full-size either. They're a little bit between. These are like micro ITX, I believe, is the board size. PFSense, that's what it is. PFSense does the software. These guys do the hardware. When you go on PFSense and say, I want to buy a device, you're basically buying from PC Engines. And they have really nice hardware, man. I don't know how they're able to do it.
What's the cost on that?
You can get a good one for about $130, $160. Okay. I'll say me and Tracy Holtz have been on a task for at least 6 years of trying to find that golden piece of hardware with 2 gigabit NICs where you can basically prepackage it up and sell it to small offices, home offices, and even people's homes as a enterprise grade strength intrusion detection and firewall system. PC Engines is a little bit pricey. Tracy always wanted the $100 mark. I think we're going to get there. I think we're getting close. But right now, if you really want company support, you go to PC Engines. You can browse their devices. They have complete hardware that you can put together to make your own custom box, custom board, custom amount of RAM, custom processors, and build your own computer. But I've never seen a microcomputer with even 2 SATA ports.
Well,
I mean, most don't have one.
Well, hang on, Dor. I just added something into the chat as well as the show notes. And this is a small form factor board from a company called Embedded Solutions out in San Diego.
A quote.
Yes. So when you get language like that, you know the price is going to be up there.
Yeah, this is the same company that we have in our notes under line 371. Mm-hmm. Same exact company. So this company is going full bore on trying to get into these single board computers that are Intel based.
Yes. So we're talking, these are fourth generation Core i5, Core i7 quad core processors with 4 SATA ports, 8 2.0 USBs, 3.0 USBs, and 2 1 gig Ethernet ports. But what's his name? Mike's email is a little. It bothers me a little bit because he's saying that he's not able to find firewalls that are suitable for him. And one of the main things when I was looking for firewalls is throughput. So, you know, you get these high speed tiers that are out there with your service providers. Nowadays, we're seeing speeds up to, you know, 200 meg, even one gig, you know. So how can I get a firewall that will have that throughput where I can do deep packet inspection? And what I mean by that is actually looking at each packet to seeing, you know, where it's coming from, where it's going, what it has in the payload before I send it out or before it actually comes into my network. And the throughput on that is really where you want your high speed. So just to give a little example, some high-end commercial firewalls will run you about $700, maybe, you know, a couple of $1,000s, depending on what brand you're going with a very high throughput. So if you're going to go with a custom solution, then you know, you kind of want to make sure you have some really good hardware, solid hardware as well too. So when you're paying $150 for a box, you might get what you pay for, you know, as far as hardware is concerned. With software, most of that is in the software. You know, you want your features, like I was stating before, the deep packet inspection. You want that kind of a feature in your firewall software, as well as, you know, some honeypot alternative solutions as well too. So I'm wondering what angle he's trying to get at or what needs he's looking for, because what's out there now and available to us, it's great. You know, we have a lot to choose from, but if you want certain features and you need certain key things, like, you know, the 6 SATA ports that he's mentioning, you're going to have to pay for it, you know?
Oh, yeah. the APU2 from PC Engines that he mentions in there, it's a 6x6 inch door. That's the size of it. 3 gigabit ports on it, and it's 100 with, if you get it with 4 gigs of RAM, $114 for that.
Yeah, I know a couple people that went and bought these. Now, when you buy them, you're really supposed to go through the process of picking the motherboard, then the RAM, the antennas, the case, and everything else. When you add everything up, I want to say you're typically pushing like 170. 180. I'll say this. My one buddy, Liam, friend of mine, and Eric's, he ordered the parts. Then when he got them, he realized that he had to basically pull out the Dremel and make extra holes in the case for his Wi-Fi antennas. Not everybody's going to want to do that. Not everyone's going to want to is going to be happy with that.
Yeah, but you're paying decent. I mean, it's still pretty reasonably priced, but you're paying decent enough money that the case should accommodate those features that they're selling you.
If you basically go to pcengines.ch and then order/htm, they have a link right there for USD prices. If you're in Europe, you just hit Euro prices, and they list all of the major components right there, and like the cases right there in a very easy fashion where you can go through and you can look at all the items.
And I'm not trying to trash Mike here, but I'm just reading his last paragraph. It sounds like if he's looking for good throughput in a firewall, and you're right, the Ubiquiti and the MikroTik are going to do it. The only thing I can think of is there's been a new version of, what was it, the Banana Pi router? It's the R2, I think, if I recall correctly. But I haven't, all I know it is that it exists. The Banana Pi R1, or the original Banana Pi router, was lame, like you wouldn't believe.
And expensive.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't mean to shoot a listener down, but it sounds like unicorn leather. I mean, we're really... You're talking more Nook-type feature set as opposed to mini PC feature set.
And usually the USB 3.0 would be sufficient enough. I'm not saying it's going to take the place of a SATA port. But
now, if you're looking for 6 SATA ports, you're looking for a heavy-duty board.
Yeah, you're right.
That's, you know, top end of the enthusiast boards that you're sporting 6 SATA ports. And we're not talking mini PC boards. We're talking, you know, mini ITX boards.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and like he's comparing them to $50-ish dollar boards.
Yeah.
You don't. You typically don't go single board computer to save money. I'll just
maybe
because right now you're literally doing it as a enthusiast because you want to have the control and you want to build it yourself, which means you are right now going to spend twice, if not more, than that price making your custom solution. You buy things onesie twosie versus a company who buys pieces in 10,000s of lots. They're going to always pay less.
May save money electricity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I thank you guys for going into that email. This might just be an email show. We got some good emails and maybe we can elaborate on.
Well, and I'll just finalize this with Mike. I think he's just ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
I think what he wants is around the corner. It's just not there yet. I mean, the six out of ports, what I'm hoping is by the time this becomes real, it's going to be lightning USB C type ports or something else, because I don't think SATA on these mini things are going to be a real solution. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, you have a 3D printer like Rich and you can make your own custom enclosure, because, or you're going to have drives just hanging off, flopping around like an octopus.
Yes. Okay, well, I smell of a mini ATX coming his way soon.
So, one last thing on this email. Do you guys think we're going to have SATA ports more prevalent in 2017, or is that something, you know, beyond the next 12 months?
Man, SATA ports have been around for so long, though. I don't know. Well, does USB 3 hold up, or the USB C hold up to anything close to a SATA port?
C, I believe, does.
And they're smaller, which would be easier.
Smaller, but the problem is the drives don't come with that as a native port. You're going to have to get the drive manufacturers to change the port coming off the drive.
Yeah, true.
SATA 3, I believe you can go up to 6 gig transfer speeds. Mm-hmm. After that, I don't know what we could do, but I know if you just want convenience factor, USB 3 is going to be the solution, period, because you can just get external enclosures for next to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Put whatever drives you want in them, USB 3 back to the device. And USB 3 is going to become, I think, really insanely popular this year. I think we're going to start finally seeing USB-C devices in some places, but I don't know how popular it's going to be in the mini computers just yet.
Are you losing some control and functionality by going up to a USB rather than being down and dirty with a SATA, more closer to the data?
If you ask a drive tard, as I call them, like Scott Moulton, and I can say that because he's not listening to this, Scott Moulton knows more about hard drives than anybody on this show knows about anything else. I have no problem saying that. This is the guy that teaches three-letter agencies all over the world how to pull data off hard drives.
Does he have a show on Podnuts too?
When he does, wow. Yes, but it's rare. The USB spec purposefully dumbs down communications between host and clients when it comes to hard drives. To get the raw connection, you have to have either IDE or a SATA-type connection to have the true amount of command set that is intended via hard drives. If you go to USB, you lose two-thirds of the commands. And that's what he would say.
Good. Well transferred over. Thank you. All right. So our next email is from... it's from Brian Navarrete, and he says, maybe I misunderstood, but I've been able to use DD to copy a running system, current running boot partition and root partition, to another SD card. I use this process to go from a 32 gig card to a 64 gig card. I'm not sure if you can do it over a network. Good show. Keep up the project stuff. Keep the project stuff coming. Less product reviews. Emphasis on low end, i.e. cheap boards, is what interests me. Thanks, Brian. So, do you guys use the ultimate Linux cloning tool called DD?
All the time.
Oh, yeah, I use it all the time. But when he's talking about doing it to a live system, I mean, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. I've never even...
Yeah.
I mean, I know you can, what's called P2V, and Richard knows all about this. Mm-hmm. You can P2V live systems, but when you do that, you typically invoke a thing called QSing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you QS a live running system, you basically ask the system in a very nice way to gingerly pause all of your processes and let me copy some stuff. To not QS and to just go in DD folders, I don't want to say it scares the hell out of me. If you really know what you're doing, I do believe now that he says that, you can DD certain drives certain folders, certain key folders, that could make it very easy to copy applications, configurations, and data sets from a running system. But that requires more acumen than I have available to me, is what I'll say. So he's sharper than I.
Yeah, I've never tried to clone something while it was booted before. Sounds cool. I've never tried it, though. Richard?
No, I haven't given that a try. And I just think Dirty Read. That's just the first thing that comes to my mind.
Well, if you can QS, mm-hmm. then you can copy freely. But I do think you could suspend services temporarily. It's faster than shutting the whole system down. Suspend services, copy key component folders via DD. But would that be a DD? I don't know. Bro, I'll tell you this. He's making me think. And literally, I'm going to have to
try it now.
I'm going to have to bow to him and say he's smarter than I am.
Yeah, but this doesn't sound like a simple DDIFOF.
I'm going to ask people that know more than me.
And if you guys don't know what we're talking about, just Google DD in Linux and you'll find all the commands and stuff.
Sudo DD.
And DD, DD is available for Windows 2 via the GNU for Windows toolset, which I abuse at work and people hate me for.
Brian, have you ever played with DD? I honestly haven't. I haven't done any cloning in the Linux world. I've just done...
mini PC world. You're not doing DD?
That's how you get stuff on off. Well, no, because he used Barry... Not Barry Boot. What's it called?
Yeah, well, Eric, he used Barry Boot and the Western Digital version of that, too. And
right. With those, you literally format it FAT32, copy files over,
no.
boot to it, and then it automatically...
Expands. Oh, no.
Yeah, no DD.
Oh.
Win32 imager.
Yeah, that works real good if you got that Win32 thing.
Yeah, on the Linux world, Eric, that's the only way that we can get operating systems onto SD cards is by using DD.
Hmm.
Well,
or Barry Boot.
Well, yeah, but we want a custom thing from a Pine64. There ain't no Barry Boot for that.
We've got more hair. Just can't see them.
You have more hair?
I wish. You know, actually, honestly, this whole podcast, none of us don't have too much for hair, do we? Okay, Tony Clark has a simple pie project that young and old boys will love, and he is linking to a RaspberryPi.org whoopee cushion. Have you guys checked this out?
Well, first I'll say, for years, I called him Tony Clark because I'm blind as a bat. What's your excuse?
Oh, sorry. It is
because
his Tony. Name is... It's got to be my blindness. Yeah, it's not even close. Tony Siak. I'm sorry, Tony.
Right. Yeah. He was looking for a project that I could do with my kids to make them happy, and he found on the RaspberryPi.org a Raspberry Pi / whoopee cushion.
By creating a whoopee cushion with your Raspberry Pi, you will learn how to make a paper plate button to trigger an event. You can learn to make a paper plate button, and also how to program the GPIO pins using loops, lists, and variables.
I tell you, this is right up my speed. That's what I'm saying. Man, for kids, this is
so dork. You don't even have to have good lungs anymore. You just need two paper plates, it sounds like, and you'll have a contact inside there somehow, and it must have a speaker somewhere too, I'm assuming.
Because
you would loop a variable sound file, right?
I don't know where that you say. I don't know where they're going to play the audio out of.
Is the paper plate the speaker?
It says connect the speaker to the Raspberry Pi using the sound jack, so it's a separate speaker. They just don't show.
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing. Here's the real reason why I like this. It's literally a one-page thing. Unlike today's obsessive multi-article pages where you got to click through next. This all fits on one page. It's a slightly long page, but it all fits on one page. It's using verbiage that I do think anybody can comprehend. All you got to know is just the basics of the Raspberry Pi. Very nice pictures, very nice drawings, and it looks like very well documented steps on how to get everything set up and running.
They're also setting the kids up, or setting the parents up here. You introduce this to your kid. If you scroll all the way down to the bottom of this page, it says, what's next? Learn to make a parent detector for your room. That's a slippery slope.
Uh-oh.
That's pretty cool. I like it.
Crikey.
Love this.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, this is definitely good stuff. Yeah, Tony's a really good guy. He's been in contact with Podnuts for years, is what I want to say. This is one that gets incredibly bookmarked for me, and I gotta show it to my kid and see if I can get him interested in it.
I think he'll get. I think he can do that. You know what? I think the first email that I see here is a repeat one from earlier, so I don't know if I have any more.
Yeah, the last one I saw was just a
Mike F.
Happy New Year from David.
Oh, okay. Thank you, David. So far, so good.
Well, we're still here.
Yeah.
We'll know Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's already like countdown things and doomsday thing.
here's the thing. Some of us know a guy by the name of Klaatu. Klaatu lives in New Zealand. I've heard multiple people in New Zealand say in the last week, why are you Americans that are upset? Why are you so upset? So you voted into president as a country, somebody who you personally think is an idiot. So what? Get over it. He'll be gone in 4 years. Worst case scenario, 8 years. Get over it. Go do something else for that 4 years. If you don't, and they were like, if you really don't like it, just get out of the country and shut up.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell left, right?
Did she?
I don't know.
No.
We voted in people who didn't think were idiots that ended up being too. So
yeah,
we're okay. We'll be all right. I agree with.
Here's the thing, and I don't mean to get too political. No matter who won the election, this is still the best country in the world.
True that.
Yeah, and I personally like to believe, and I want to say it was, I don't even remember who it was, some foreign dignitary that I can't remember their name because they're foreigners. They're foreigners, and I don't listen to foreigners. But somebody said something to the effect of, the best thing about the presidency of the United States is you are in control of the largest ship in the ocean, but you have the smallest rudder to...
Ah, excellent way of putting it.
...steer with. Well, and I don't know how true that is these days, because this was like 60 years ago, but I do think there is some truth to it. So, yes, the president, no matter who it is, can do stuff, but also there is a built-in system of checks and balances for a lot of things. So, rarely can one person ever be responsible for a lot of things in our government we call a democratic republic. It's usually collusion happening with multiple people.
Well, really, we're a constitutional republic.
Constitutional republic. What'd I say?
Democratic republic.
Close enough. There's
direct democracy acting within our constitutional republic, but yes.
Yes. So,
there you have it.
I'll say this before we get started. We have a hell of a lot of links in these notes here.
You're missing stuff.
This is literally crazy.
You know what you're missing? What? Is diet pie.
No, I'm not. Line 377. Boom.
I thought I did a quick scan.
Boom. Diet Pie version 1.42
got
released January 14th. And there is a couple things that I wanted to point out about this. And it's not the fact that Diet Pie had a version release. That's not really the important
thing. No, Diet Pie has a version release all the time.
Well, yeah. Here's what's important. I've now witnessed from three different people telling me that they contacted Diet Pie and said, hey, what about X? And weeks later, Diet Pie has an installer for that piece of software. They seem to be one of the most open to communication.
I got
to
send them money. I hate, I'm such a slug on this. I got to click donate and send them some money because they are, you know, I've had Twitter correspondences with them on things. In what I've got powering Diet Pie around here, or what I've found Diet Pie to be the only solution for, these guys really, I've been talking them up. I've been giving them a lip service. I got to reach into the pocket and hand some cash over. So you do have it in the notes here. You got full backup, which is stink cool. I don't know how they're doing it, and I haven't tried it. But I don't see Open Media Vault.
I want to say it's in the summary. I can't remember where they said. Maybe it was viewing the changelog. There was some way where you could see software added, removed, or revisioned. And OMV, Open Media Vault, was one of the things that was officially added. And literally, my one buddy believes it's because he asked. And it doesn't matter if it is or isn't. The point is, my buddy feels like it is, and he believes that it is, which means as far as he's concerned, it is because he asked. There's a lot of software out there. There's a lot of good software out there, okay? In some ways, there's better software than Diet Pi, but I have not seen a OS be as nimble and communicative as Diet Pi in a couple
and,
of years.
And this is kind of going to dovetail into another thing. So I have the... I bought two Orange Pi Zeros, and my logic behind the Orange Pi Zero is... Did I talk about the Orange Pi Zero on the last show, or...?
You did, but not much. Okay.
So yeah,
you mostly were rubbing Diet Pi all over your skin.
Yeah. Right. So the Orange Pi Zero, the big thing is to me that it's kind of in the Raspberry Pi 2, like fitting in between Raspberry Pi 2 and 3 performance. It's got a real low price, about $12, and if you can wait the 4 to 6 weeks or whatever from to come from China. It does have Wi-Fi and Ethernet on board. I think it's 10100. I'd have to look. There's also a $3 daughter board that gives you a microphone, 3.5mm jack, IR sensor, and two more USB ports. So pretty good. I printed the case for it, several weeks before it actually arrived. So that was kind of cool. I do have one of those heat sinks. It's a little smaller than it should be. I want to get a bigger one. It's a copper heat sink with like the rods coming off it, and the thing does run warm. And I am running Home Automation Assistant on it, and what else? I think I'm running something else on it. But I have been running Home Automation Assistant on it. It definitely needs a heat sink. Was it the Orange Pi PC that died on me?
Orange Pi 1.
Yeah, I think that had a early mortality issue because of the amount of heat it was generating. And if I had a better heat sink and, more airflow, it would have been better for it. So anyhow, the short end of the review, would I buy more? I'm kind of cautiously optimistic. So if you're looking to do something connected with a Raspberry Pi Zero, you're going to spend like $15 to get there. So let's see. I do have a list here on... Okay. All right. So the cons on the Orange Pi Zero is it says it has power over Ethernet, but it's supposed to be only 3 to 4 meters. It's not standard power over Ethernet. Now... I've got a power over Ethernet access point I put in the rafters of my house to get Wi-Fi into my backyard. And I've got it on a 100-foot cable and it's working. And I'd have to look up the voltage on the adapter to figure out what it is. But, 3 to 4 meters power over Ethernet, I got an extension cord. That, for me, if you say power over Ethernet, I expect to be hanging it on a 100-foot cord somewhere. Unreachable, so we don't have to run two wires. The heat was, without a heat sink, was about 70 degrees C. It's 70 degrees Fahrenheit in the house, and the heat was in the 50s, about 50 degrees C, with a heat sink. And the Wi-Fi, so I have two of these. With Diet Pi, the Wi-Fi, it uses the same MAC address. So you have to fiddle with the Wi-Fi config and give it a different MAC address. So if you have two running on Wi-Fi, that's kind of a pain. It says it will run Raspbian and Android. Got me on that. Which leads to the next problem. Quote unquote, it has video. Quote unquote, it has no usable video. And when I say no usable video, it doesn't have an HDMI, mini HDMI. It doesn't have any kind of port like that. You grab a ground and a power off whatever pin and you have composite video out. So that's why I haven't diagnosed why Android or Raspberry Pi won't boot on this, because I don't have video out to figure it out. In all honesty, I don't want video out. Really, I just want the darn thing to work. And, with Diet Pi, it works. And I did a version of Debian and that worked. And let's see. It does. Oh, all right. So next thing on my list, the hat fits, but there's screws that don't line up with screws on the board. So like if you put standoffs or anything like that, you got me on how you're going to do it. The only way I can figure is if I print a case that has a top and a bottom and some pins, and I still don't have a clear idea on how to do it. And also, if you have a heat sink, if you have the really tall one that I have, you're not going to get the hat on. So that's a bit of a factor. It does have a mini set of pins. It doesn't have 40 pins like a Raspberry Pi. The other kind of con to it is it's from AliExpress, which isn't Express. It should just be Ali. It shouldn't be AliExpress. That's...
Well, it depends on the item. Right when you're looking at the item, it says estimated delivery time between 19 and 39.
Yeah. Days. All right. You're right. You got to read, unlike me. All right. So the pros. It does have micro-B power. It is a quad-core. 512 meg of RAM. Wi-Fi, Cat5, full-size USB. It's $9 to $12, depending on how many you buy, whether they add the extra couple of dollars in for shipping or whatever. You got a $2, okay, it was a $2 hat, with a mic, audio out, IR, two USB, but you need a heatsink. Whenever you're going away from a Raspberry Pi device, you're getting into that gray area on quality, etc. And I would say you're pretty much in the 50-50 range. Like what I really consider bulletproof, the Banana Pi Pro. Love that thing. Just works. No issues. The Banana Pi M3, you know, they're not as solid as the Banana Pi Pro. So really, once you get away from the Raspberry Pi brand, you're getting into more questionable hardware that could, or, you know, it's a coin toss as to whether it's really going to be good. My intended philosophy of use was really like a low-cost Raspbian device. And what I wanted to do was use it for OctoPi, or, you know, the OctoPrint that runs on the Pi, because it runs on Raspberry Pi. So they have their own distro that you just fire up and use. But since I can't run Raspbian on it, it's not going to run OctoPi. And I really wanted to. I've got a, out in the Tiki Hut, I've got a Raspberry Pi 2 running PiAware for FlightAware, and it's monitoring aircraft flying over and feeding them data through a software SDR dongle, and it's monitoring ADS-B and transponder mode S out. And I wanted to throw that out there so I could use a, you know, Raspberry Pi 2 with its 40-pin header and do other stuff. So I'm a little, you know, on the fence as to whether it's going to be suitable for these things. Not easily suitable. And let's see. Yeah, the performance is somewhere between a Pi 2 and a Pi 3. And I know Dor's not quite a fan of this guy, Mick. He's got a YouTube channel. And he gives you a graph with all the stats on it. So it on all of the performance numbers averaged together, it sits somewhere between a Pi 2 and a Pi 3 on performance. So can I firmly recommend it as a solid buy? No, I'm still on the fence. My philosophy of use for it is probably going to be adjusted from what my intended philosophy of use was going to be. But I think it's going to be a decent device. The heat's an issue.
Well, first off, there really quick. I'm technically a fan of Micmac. I just despise the useless content at the very beginning of any of his videos. If you want to add useless, because you're not a comedian, content, put it at the back of the
good
video.
Good point. You know what?
Put the content in front.
And it's kind of like the Tilts podcast. We have some pre-show banter, and Dan always cuts it and puts it on the end of the show. So if you're done, we're done with the show, boom, fine. And if you want to listen to that crap, fine. Otherwise, tune out.
Yeah, and I'll try to have a link to his videos in the
show notes.
in the shirts. Because to be honest, he does have very good information.
He's very thorough. You know, he's very programmatically thorough on his reviews.
Right. And I'll say, here's the plus. Here's, to me, one of the pluses with the Orange Pi Zero versus the Raspberry Pi Zero. Even if it takes 45 days to get this device, for some people, it's easier to get this device and quicker to get this device than a Raspberry Pi Zero.
You're right. And I hate buying a $5 device and paying $5 shipping. Not like the $5 hurts me so bad, but I'm paying 50% of the cost in shipping. That's annoying.
Yeah. To me, this is the best thing about these devices is it costs very little money to at least tinker, inquire, educate yourself, explore possibilities, and just have fun and develop ideas. If you ever think about full production quality, if you do buy one of these devices, you better buy three of these devices to make sure you have backups. So when the first one goes down, you can replace it, because it's just a fact. Cheaper hardware will expire quicker.
Yeah, and the one thing, so when you're running Diet Pi, what I've been running is a command called CPU, and CPU shows you clock speed of the cores, and it shows the temperature, and it'll give you like, ooh, cool running, it'll give you a comment, and it'll also change the color of the numbers. So it's like, oh, warm but okay, it's like you're doing damage, it'll give you those kind of comments. And I never really looked at the Orange Pi 1 that went DOA on me, but I know the thing was warm all the time. It was warm with nothing running on it, just the OS running, period. So I'm worried about heat being an issue, and for my data center in a drawer, I bought a 120-millimeter fan that I'm going to mount and wire into there, so there's air flowing over that Banana Pi M3 and these Orange Pi Zeros, because they're definitely going to need some accessory cooling. Now, I was using, through just doing some testing, that GearBest drone, that micro drone. Yeah. So that cools it down real fast.
Yeah, for what, 6-minute increments or so?
Oh, yeah. And I think what's wrong with that GearBest micro drone is the battery, I think the voltage drops off real quick, because you'll be in a steady hover and the thing just starts dropping, and then you gotta, you know, work the throttle, and then you worked it too much. So you're constantly rocking the throttle up and down to maintain altitude. I mean, I fly, or I have flown, I haven't really flown in 10 years, a lot of RC, and have a lot of experience with that, and that thing's pretty hard to fly. But I do want to talk about something pseudo mini PC also. And I threw this up in the Google Plus mini PC chat or forum, blog, whatever you call it. I have some Nooks, and I use them as a VMware lab. And somebody on Thingiverse basically printed a ring, you know, it's a square with round corners, so you can stack them and they won't move around. And then I modified that design, so because my stack, I have the two Nooks, so they're going to sit on top of each other. Then I have a 5-port gig switch, and then on top of that, I have a super cheap Tenda router, and that gives me access point connectivity to my Wi-Fi network. And they hold everything together in a vertical stack. And I want to say thank you to the guy that designed that. And it's just so stink cool, you know, having a 3D printer. You know, you get a 3D printer, then you find a use case for it. It's like, well, I got to print stuff now. What do I need? How do I do this? And that was, I've been, you know, talking to people like Door and whoever I can, bending their ear, trying to figure out how to do this thing and make it more portable, or, you know, organize it in a way. And I'd love to print some sort of custom case with a battery in there, and that I could have it portable and battery powered. I think that would be the ultimate goal. But, you know, having fun with 3D printer and printing some practical stuff, so that's kind of fun.
This is also that really cheap 3D printer that you were talking about that you did.
Yeah, so that's the GearBest. I think I paid $153 and $24 shipping, and a couple of $20-something, you know, like $20 and change spools of filament from Amazon. So my investment in this printer is really low, you know.
Oh, and you bought the Teflon.
The Teflon barrel, and so
which was like what, like $1.50 or something.
Hey, I think it was like $6 or $7 for five of them for a packet of five. So
yeah,
the only upgrade that I paid for was that, and I bought a couple of nozzles, and the nozzles again. I mean, we're talking chump change. What else did I? Oh yeah, I got it right here. I've got there. You can upgrade the firmware to make it auto level. And one of the guys already did that, and he's got the same printer as I do, and he bought the proximity sensor. I don't know how it works. It's a capacitive sensor, and I hate to sound like such a chicken. I don't have any problem doing the hardware. I already printed the mounting bracket for it. I don't have any problem physically mounting it. I don't have any problem, you know, doing a voltage divider to hook it up to the Z-axis switch. I'm just... really chicken about flashing the firmware and then going through whatever testing and setup process, because the thing's working. You know, it's I don't want to mess with it. It's working, and if I do mess with it, I'm going to be unhappy. You know, if I futz it up.
You use that 3D printer more than anybody I know uses theirs. You've got so much experience with that, and I appreciate you not wanting to break it if it's not broken. Looking back at it now, though, and with all the research you've done in improving yours and things, what would you do different if you didn't have that printer and you knew what you know now? Would you still order the same one?
You know, it's funny, because the first week I had the printer, I went on the other podcast, Tilts, and I said, yeah, I don't know if I'd recommend buying this. I maybe you want to buy the $400 Prusa kit, or maybe you want to buy the $650 fully assembled Prusa, because in... that Teflon-coated barrel made all the difference in the world. I think what happened is after my first test print, the nozzle was hot and some of the filament got stuck into the barrel. And after that, I would have jam after jam after jam. And I was ready to throw the thing out.
Sure.
And the, well, like I said, I $6 or $7 on Amazon, I got five of these stinking barrels. One will last me probably a year or more. I'm guessing it might last me many years, unless I have some malfunction.
So have you had no jams with the since you switched to the Teflon?
Yes, no jams.
Great.
Yeah, I did change a nozzle. I forgot why. So, I would, realistically, would I buy the same printer? Absolutely. I would go with the Teflon barrel. I mean, that's a no-brainer. From the start, I guess I would set up the auto bed leveling and the firmware. This way, I don't ever have to worry about the leveling. An upgrade I'm contemplating is the borosilicate glass for the bed, because right now I'm using, you know, the wide blue painter's tape and Elmer's stick glue. And depending on what material you're printing with, I've been doing a lot of PETG, and the PETG, what I like about it a lot is it pops when the bed is cold. It easily releases from the bed. The PLA, I'm always pulling up tape and I'm prying, and there's a lot of, not like it's a whole lot, not like peeling off the old tape, putting on new tape and putting glue on top of it, you know, rubbing stick glue on. It's a lot of maintenance, but the PLA, there always seems to be that maintenance cycle you have to go through between prints, whereas with the PETG, it just pops off.
All right, well, Dor, there you go, man. You need one, and if you get the same one Richard has, he'll be right there for support.
I can't get the one he has because I don't have the time to tweak it. I don't have the time to maintain it. The beautiful thing about that printer is it's based off the Prusa?
I think it's Prusa.
Prusa framework. Ideology, mechanics, layout, definition, which means it's utterly easy to take any component off and upgrade it and just keep upgrading. To where if he keeps that printer in 2 years, he could have the tightest, quickest, finest 3D printer for the bang for the buck, where he could have multiple filaments printed in multiple colors and, you know, all kinds of stuff. But he's going to have to build up to that. When I get the printer, I'm just going to just do it and buy the $700 Prusa Mark II i3, blah, 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 blah. But one thing we did find out, Richard, I don't know if you remember this. There's a different philosophy in 3D printing where these are, what are they called, Stepford motors?
Stepper motors.
Stepford motors. Stepford.
Those are the wives.
Just the wives.
Yeah. And we got a link from somebody that I put in the chat to a different type of mechanic in the 3D printing world. This is also in the early stages. You know, the only, I think, constant is going to be change and dramatic change in all these kind of technologies. And it's just going to be really interesting, in my opinion, moving forward. Is there any more notes that we wanted to bring up? Because I will say, we literally have, it's one of those things, we literally have too many, too many links in the notes.
Ready to start.
I know. well, the couple things I'll say is, there is more Friendly Arm Nano Pi devices. There are more Orange Pi devices than just the ones that we mentioned here that have been, basically came out. The one thing I wanted to bring up, though, was competition. I love competition. The Raspberry Pi compute module.
Yeah.
But if you take a look at line 384, it's a link to a Lilliputian article where they basically talk about a competitor's device. And it's from the Pine 64 people, the SoPine A64 $29 PC card that has twice the RAM of the Raspberry Pi's compute module. So it's the same form factor, but you literally get 2 gigs of RAM in this puppy. Competition's good. It isn't that I want one to win versus the other, because I really, to a degree, don't care who wins. But I want companies to keep challenging companies to do better. I haven't seen anybody compete with the Raspberry Pi compute module. So now somebody is, and it just happens to be Pine 64 people, which, to be honest, is one of the companies that I really do like to support. And I really do like what I'm seeing they do. Also, next month is when they're supposedly going to announce their Pinebook laptop, sub-$100 laptop. So I look forward to that one as well.
All right, so I got one question that covers a couple items. What about networking? And same thing for this Pine board and the Raspberry Pi boards that they released. I haven't seen anything about networking on them.
As far as I can tell, these are not built for that. And I say this, I am easily, utterly confused. Compute modules are taking a main component of the single board computer and breaking it out. If you scroll all the way down, you see a group of, I believe it is 5 pictures. The top middle picture, if you click on that one, you see in the middle, that's where the compute module goes. It sticks in here. And then around the outside, you see things like Ethernet.
Oh, okay.
So what I gather is it's supposed to be like a replaceable part in mass manufacturing. Ooh. Is the compute module.
So you're, okay, you're replacing the RAM and the CPU.
Well,
easily.
It looks like RAM, but it's not. It's actually the processor, the RAM, and you know, the solid-state hard drive.
So I'm going to go back in the time machine pre-Raspberry Pi, and this is 10-plus years ago. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Dallas Semiconductor. There are another ones that have done a lot of cool stuff. So Dallas Semiconductor, many years ago, had something very similar to this, and it was called the Tiny Board, T-I-N-I, which was, oh gosh, it was a board that basically ran a objectified version of Java. You would program it in Java. It would drop into, I don't know, like a DIMM slot or in a carrier board like this. But on the board itself, it had all of the pins for Ethernet, etc. So all of that, if I recall correctly, that it had Ethernet, I'm pretty sure.
I'm looking at it now. Or it looks like it. Yeah, it's got Ethernet, yeah.
Okay, good. Because I got one in a box somewhere. And my real goal for that, I bought one or two of those back in the day. And my real goal was to, like, hey, you know, have something that got me interested in writing Java code. But it didn't succeed.
So was it the idea you could solder your own Ethernet port onto it?
Well, the idea is that the just like this on the Sopine, you have that like carrier that. Board. Is so you can do all of your prototyping with this board, and then you just have the memory socket, and you could solder that onto another board and put it in a device that you're going to use. Or, you know, maybe you're going to use it like a Pi device like I am around my house. So you just put it on a, you know, breadboard with the socket, and then you can wire it to stuff.
It's funny because... You know how this Pine board looks like the new like laptop memory card that goes mm-hmm. the one you're talking about, the teeny board, looks just like the old memory cards look like.
Yes, you're right.
And
that's how they do it.
To give you an idea what Rich is talking about here, how old it is, there's a what's new, July 10th. What is a web ring?
Oh.
Oh my.
Yeah, it's got a link explaining to you what a web ring is because wow, very cool.
Okay, that's, yeah, that's a little crazy.
These guys saw the future, didn't they?
Well, here's the thing. There have been small devices like this, like the basic stamps and PIC microcontrollers and stuff like that for a long time. The Raspberry Pi Foundation, just like Apple didn't invent the computer, Apple didn't invent the MP3 player. They just popularized it. They made it accessible. They added something to the market that didn't exist before. And whether it was that it was very cheap or very popular, or that, you know, it was easily programmable, they added some feature to something that has always existed and made it so much more better.
Right. Well, piggybacking on that, this is my attempt at a transition. Not being the first, but trying to do something better than the original company brings me to actually two lines in our notes, line 367 and 368. But go ahead and look at 367, and what you see is a link to a Ars Technica article where they basically say, Intel's compute card is a PC that can fit in your wallet. To which I immediately stop and say, Brian, what does this look like to you? Because when I click and open it, it looks exactly like what you were bringing to the show, at least now,
it's
3
actually,
months ago,
it's actually
the Kangaroo.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry?
No, go ahead.
It, to me, looks like the Kangaroo PC computer that you brought. So Intel didn't invent this. Let me say that again. Intel didn't invent this. Intel is following in the footsteps of a computer company called Kangaroo. Okay? I never thought I'd be saying that. Okay, so they have a device that looks like a little card that you could fit inside of your wallet. That's a Intel-based computer at least a USB-C port on it. They expect it to be out this year. The specs are all over the board, what they say this could be, this can entail, this could be. But then if you take a look in the notes at line 368, we then get an article on Lilliputian. Again, one of my favorite websites. And if you scroll down, it is labeled Intel Compute Card will be the upgradable brains of the second gen Next Dock laptop dock. And then you scroll down a little bit and you see almost to a T what the Kangaroo laptop was doing. So again, Intel and, you know, these other companies are following the footsteps of Kangaroo. Kangaroo was the innovators. Kangaroo were the people that basically broke down the walls in manufacturing, and now these companies are coming up. Now, NextDock, we talked about months ago. NextDock was one of the Indiegogo Kickstarter campaign things where you could basically hook up your phone or a Raspberry Pi to your laptop-like device and portray things. Well, now they're getting into it with the Intel Compute module.
So is there a possibility that there may be a standard with the interface that comes off of that compute card that other companies could use?
What I'll say is whenever I see Intel doing these kind of things, all they're trying to do is develop a standard that other people use.
I think this is a great idea because I don't know, I can't be the only one in the room, but my laptop is old, but it works. Would I like to get a faster, updated that laptop? Yes. But is there a reason I can't find a justification if the screen's working, the keyboard's working, the battery holds a charge, you know, it's still good enough. If I could take and just swap out a card and pop in the i7 version or whatever, you know, the newer version of what I have because it's It's a little old. You know,
that'd be, well, that, that'd that's be the concept of the desktop computers. You know, you keep your keyboard, mouse, and monitor that you spent good money on that monitor, and then you just plug in a new desktop.
Yeah, but nobody uses desktops anymore.
Right, well,
I mean,
right.
Some people do, but I mean, I'm using one right now, I guess, but not that I have to.
No, I have five plugs plugged in. I'm looking at it. I have five plugs plugged into my MacBook Pro. You know, two monitor cables, two USB cables, and a power cable.
That must be one of them back when they used to have ports.
Yes. Yeah. 2012.
Well, Eric, first off, let me say the obvious. There is nobody in the room but you. We're podcasting remotely. but secondly, I have to say, this is the kind of thing I think everybody interested in tech had to think that they wanted years mm-hmm. ago. To me, this is the kind of thing it was eventual to happen. I'm just happy it's finally happening. It might become a real boy this year, you know? I'm utterly interested in it. But most importantly, from my bias point of view, the damn thing better run Linux or I'm going to be really upset.
Wouldn't it be nice if that not only can you change the hardware out that quickly, but also the whole operating system and software suite? So say if you've got one Next dock and your wife wants to do Pinterest and you want to do video editing, same hardware, just swap in your photo, Premiere Pro card with the i7 and she can use the Celeron with the, you know, Firefox.
Yeah. And then of course when she drops hers and has to use yours, you know, but yes, I do like the idea of personalized computer in your pocket. To where, you know, my son, you know, wants more graphics. You know, my wife want more RAM and a basic Chrome OS, mm-hmm. where I want a Linux operating system. We all could use the same shell, but have our different computers.
You guys are bringing up a lot of good topics. So the thing that I'm thinking about as you're talking is, who is the market for something like this? What, you know, who's going to buy something like this? I can't imagine on having one computer in the house and swapping out cards between my wife.
No. See, here's how it works is you have, like, I have a bar in the kitchen. You leave one on the bar, and then whoever just walks out with their card and wants to sit out there and use it, uses it. Or maybe you have it hooked up to the TV, that maybe you're, in the future your TV has a slot, or you have a smaller version of this, you know, just a carrier board that it plugs into, and it's got the power and video outs for your TV. Like, hey, I got movies on this. I want to play them, and just plug it in.
Or one of the devices could be a tablet. You just slap it in, and you have a touchscreen interface.
Or if the auto manufacturers like it. Like,
slap in the car.
I'm screaming. Or I don't know if I did this rant in the past. I have the 20
ultimate.
Yeah, okay, I did do this rant.
Was it on the show? I don't remember if it was on the show. Or
I got the 2015 Genesis Coupe Ultimate. And what does ultimate mean to any human being?
Oh, yeah,
best.
It's the best. Yes. And what does it mean to Hyundai Genesis brand? I don't get the best.
It means.
Well, no, there's things that you get in the ultimate package, you know, the Brembo brakes, etc., that you don't get, and the, you know, big nav. I think it's a 9-inch nav screen. Well, the 9-inch nav screen does not have Android Auto upgrade to it, but if you got the anything other than the ultimate with a nav, the 7-inch nav, you got upgraded to Android Auto for free.
Can you just go to your dealer and say, hey, this screen's just too big. I can't handle it. Could you downsize it to like the 7-inch or something?
Yeah.
And then while you're there, put Android Auto on too.
And while you're there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll say, here's the other use case where I literally think this could make sense. And I really don't know, but I think it could. In business and enterprise, to then secure data, you just pull this little card out. And now data is secured. Mm-hmm. A fair amount of hardware failure that I've seen in the enterprise is with moving parts. Literally, like we have a kiosk in a remote building that one of the techs very intelligently was able to remotely diagnose one of the keys on the keyboard stuck. Because whenever the computer shuts down, it doesn't come back up. You simply physically unplug the keyboard from inside of the kiosk device, reboot the computer, it comes right up. So if a key breaks on this keyboard, You don't have to replace everything. You just replace the shell. And the whole point to me is you have to get the shell far enough down in the price. If you do a tablet, you got to get the tablet far enough down in price. If you do a desktop type form factor, you got to get that form factor down enough in price to make it work.
And so, you know, you said the other cool thing is, so you have a laptop and maybe the laptop's just laptop. It's not convertible. And then maybe you have a tablet. So you slide that thing into a tablet and boom, you can use it that way.
Yeah. And that was the dream of not the Zen phone, but the pad phone from Asus that was out in other countries in the last couple of years. It was a phone that you literally slapped in the back of like a 10-inch tablet, and the phone became the brains of the tablet.
I remember that. And seeing some of the all-in-one PCs that are out there now, they're looking very sleek. They're looking very nice. And you can actually could slide one of these cards into the back and in the back of one of those devices. My biggest fear about a product like this is that it's so ahead of its time that people aren't going to really catch on, you know?
But if you're an early adopter, you get orphaned.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, that's why I love mini PCs. It's like, all right, so I spent 24, you know, under 30 bucks on a couple of Orange Pi Zeros. And if the crap ain't be working, so what?
Yeah, and I'll say, I feel quote unquote better, which of course is not something you can measure or something I can justify, but I feel better when a company like Intel does this kind of thing. And then NextDoc has already proven that they can go through hard times. They had literally their factory or their deployment place completely burned to the ground. 80%+ of their stock burnt, dead, gone. They were still able to fulfill, I believe, an overwhelming majority of the pledges, like 90%+ of the pledges.
You know, if Intel does a good Super Bowl ad, a couple of them, you know, something like this could, you know, people, if they could make a good use case for the average man and some advertising, and they've got the backing to do that, some that kind of thing.
Yeah, with females barely clothed.
Sure.
I'm sure, because it's a Super Bowl ad. Yeah, I'm just really interested. I'm really hoping by June or July, this is physical, this is real, people can actually feel it, touch it kind of thing. And then I hope by Christmas, it's actually something you can buy from Dell. That, you know, wishful thinking, pipe dream, but that would be cool, in my opinion.
I definitely would spend money on it. I mean, it looks nice. It looks very sleek, very modern looking. Hey, guys, do you guys remember Endless PC? Do you remember those guys?
Yeah, they had the weird egg-shaped computer with a customized Linux that we weren't completely sure about.
Right.
But it was definitely interesting, and it wasn't very expensive.
Well, you're right. It did look like an egg. It reminded me of, for you older folks out there, the Mork and Mindy egg.
Mm.
But they came to the CES in 2017, and they've upgraded. So they've changed directions from their egg-shaped design into a very earthy...
all I think boxes. Is Bob Newhart's show.
I love that show. I really did. But if you take a look at... I think, Dor, you captured this as well, too. And I have an article posted on line 379. And Dor, yours was in here, too, as well. I don't remember which line it was on.
Yeah, 361.
Very, very nature focused, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, and to be honest, here's the thing: you gotta have a hook. You gotta have something to immediately draw people in. And I'm sorry, you have what looks like a legitimate piece of wood as the top of your computer, and certain people are going to be drawn towards it. I would think quickly.
And for $129 for a mini quad core 1.5 gigahertz PC with 2 gigs of RAM, I think I would buy that.
If it only had an LED clock behind that wood that would transfer through the wood without...
Dude, I was thinking the same thing.
Right.
Touche.
Yes, good idea.
No, the one with the wood around it, it looks like the 1970s speakerphone attachment where you lay the handset in the cradle and that's a speaker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm enough of a fan of this to keep looking at it just because I know now Endless has been around for more than a couple months. They did try their hand at their own custom OS, which I believe they still use, and I still think has merit and I still think can be used. And the price seems, I'll say, competitive. And that's, to me, is a real thing.
That's a good price for the buck. You know, bang for the buck-wise.
Yeah. They also have one that is a Celeron version with a 500 gig hard drive for $249. Mm-hmm. That's a little bit more, but I do think the ARM one for $129 seems very fair. Fair enough.
I like the company's goal. I mean, when they first came to CES in 2016, their motto was, you know, to design and build a PC for everyone, so everyone can afford to have a computer. And, you know, aside from, you know, the hooks and selling as many PCs as you can, I think that's a really good, bold, noble statement, is to, you know, try to get PCs out there to pretty much anyone. So there's no excuse why you shouldn't have one.
I'm not going to argue.
I really like that that model for the company.
Admirable.
Yeah, they did it again with their designs. I think their design team has hit the mark with me anyways. These look very very sleek and modern and rustic as well, too. You know.
Very cool. Last thing I want to throw out there, just because I don't want to say it's a novelty, but I don't think you're going to hear this kind of thing too often. Line 380 in the notes. What someone was able to do, I think, was kind of ingenious. We all know water and the properties of water when it comes to light and vision. It can do some funky stuff. It can turn things backwards, turn it around. It can be like a lens in some ways. This guy basically 3D printed a microscope that uses water as the lenses.
What?
If I read this correctly. And it's basically using the Raspberry Pi to make it a digital microscope. This is pretty cool. It's a open flexurin?
Open flexure.
Open flexure. Yeah. This is, to me, this is kind of ingenious, just the fact that it's a open hardware, 3D built, Raspberry Pi powered microscope.
Optionally Raspberry Pi powered, right?
Optionally. Just interesting is all I got to say. And if I read it right, if I looked at it right, I do think the lens was literally like a drop of water. But I might be completely mistaken when I say that.
That is amazing.
Well, yeah, they had a couple quote-unquote inventions, I'll say, in the last year that amazed me. One of them was this. The other one was the, you remember the old bird in bird cage? On one side, it's a bird. On the other side, it's a bird cage. And if you spin it fast enough, okay, people took that same basic design and they turned it into a blood centrifuge for third world countries. That, to me, is amazing. Then you had the guy that basically was able to print out of a piece of paper. You fold it up, and it was able to do microscope-type things in third-world countries as well, because the lens was very cheap and affordable, which typically was one of the most expensive pieces, but he figured out how to get it very cheap. Open hardware, I think, is really the one thing that's blowing up in this recent time. But hopefully it keeps quiet enough that big box manufacturers and big companies don't catch too much wind and try to, you know, end their life.
Yeah, since you're talking about inventions, I got to give my shout out for the Hush Me. If you guys have seen the Hush Me, it's all one word. Check it out. It's pretty cool. No third world country love or anything with that one, probably, though.
No, and we're not going to have a link to it in the notes either. It's a CES device for people who want to talk on the phone but are afraid of people hearing them talk on the phone.
Yeah.
See, now, I don't know if you guys have worked at as many places I have in the last, you know, 5, 6 years or 7 years now. Holy cow, how long I've been consulting? It's 2017, so it's going to be 8 years. I've actually, if you're as old as I am, you remember the concept of a phone booth in a payphone. Mm-hmm. I think the concept of the phone booth is coming back in some ways, and that, hey, I need to have a conversation. I don't want other people to hear. I don't want to bother them, whatever. You go in a room and close the door. And there were office buildings that I've worked at where you could go in and close a door. You know, there's a little room, and you can have a conversation with somebody and be private.
Would you hear what they're doing in New York City?
No.
They're turning some of the enclosures for public telephones into Wi-Fi hotspots.
Oh yeah, I read that. On the-
with free public access, which I'm sure is going to be slowed down. You're not going to get great speed, but at the same time, I'm also sure they're going to be spying the hell out of you.
Well, one of my buddies, he's an architect, and Verizon is one of his contracts, his main contracts. All of the pay phones, like it used to be in the 80s in New York City, every corner had about 6 pay phones. Now there's like one every other corner. Well, the pay phones have solar panels on top, and there's a cell phone inside of it. It's just bolted to the ground. There's no power going into it. You know, no power, no phone line going into it anymore.
That makes sense.
Right. And then before we go, there's one thing I got to say. Big thanks to Captain Zero in the Podnuts Mini PC Show chat, line 381. Just a friendly reminder out there. This is the time of year for the Chinese New Year. AKA, if you order something from AliExpress and it says it could take up to 40 days, if the Chinese New Year happens, basically the entire country shuts down. So whatever you order literally might take a week or two more to get to you.
Yeah, that's from January 21st to February 5th. They don't work. They'll take orders, but they won't work.
Right.
I'm moving to China.
All right.
Well, you know, if you go to France, they take off literally 4 months out of the year.
I'm moving to France.
I don't know.
Hey, one more thing before we head out. There was one really cool thing that I caught wind of. It was a pair of glasses. This is over in the wearables department here. But these glasses, they're not like a Google Glass or anything. They actually monitor your brain waves, and I believe it connects with an app on your device, and it's supposed to allow you to help you put yourself in a calm and relaxed state by sensing your brain waves. So in essence, you can hear, like say, the ocean, the background of the ocean. And the more sounds of the ocean that you hear, the louder the water smashing against the waves.
I need it now.
Yeah, you can control that with your brain waves. So the more active your brain waves are, the louder the noises get. And the more you calm yourself down and yourself in a relaxed state, the more quieter the background gets. And I thought this was a phenomenal tool to
I need it for my wife.
It's a therapeutic tool, you know? It's just a very zen massage.
So it's like instead of noise canceling, Bose headphones. I
need that in the hush.
Thought canceling glasses.
What's the name of this company? I can't.
Fitz Tepper.
It looks like Smith.
Oh, Smith. I'm sorry. Fitz Tepper's a dude.
If I buy that in the Hush Me, is that the wife package?
Oh, man. Could you imagine the blissfulness you'd get out of those two things? And just start walking around town with it? That'd be
Yeah.
Hush, I'm on the phone.
Man, I wish I could find these guys and their name.
I put a link in our chat here.
Oh, okay.
To TechCrunch. Smith is the name of the company. Shows us their brain wave sensing sunglasses. Low Down Focus is the name of their glasses, which I gotta say, I think it's a pretty good name for their glasses.
Like a good high school band name, Low Down Focus. Check this out. Channel Joe. You guys got anything else before we ended up? Take that as a no. Well, this was episode 41. Episode 40 was right before it. And they might come out very close to one another, possibly. So thank you all for listening. And check out the other shows on Podnuts Network. And don't forget to give some love back to the station and door at podnuts.com/Amazon when you're ordering all of your swimsuits, because summer's just around the corner.
Yes, it is.
Unless you're rich, when it's always summer. One Friday they had winter, I think 2 weeks ago or something. But all right, well, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Hi, this is Matt from the MRP Tech Podcast. I would like to invite you all to take a listen to my show, the MRP Tech Podcast, on the Podnuts Network. The theme for my show is everyday tech for everyday people. We talk about Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android, Chrome OS, and anything else technology related. You can find us on iTunes, and you can find us by searching in any podcatcher. We hope you take a listen and let us know what you think.